Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Special Edition, a weekly look at the issues in the news and the personalities shaping the stories. Special Edition is a production of Intercom Communications.
This week on Special Edition, we're going to focus on some in-depth interviews about things that are happening locally in the news, in particular, the issue with medical marijuana. We'll start with an interview that Intercom's Nikki Stone did with one of the local organizations.
A very big week for medical marijuana and our area. You can now buy dry leaf medical marijuana for vaporizing, not smoking. Sorry, folks. And also some grower processor facilities growing in the area. So I need to know more about this and how it all works. Hi, Abby. How are you?
Yes. Hi. How are you? It's Abby Kruger with Justice Grown. Yep.
Justice Grown Pennsylvania. Is that a company out of Colorado, California, or is it our own Pennsylvania company?
Well, Justice Grown, the original entity, comes out of Chicago, Illinois. And then we have different facilities in California. And then we developed Justice Grown PA for our operations here in Pennsylvania.
You're going to have some grower processor facilities in the area, one going into the Humboldt Industrial Park, correct?
That's right.
Now, will that create jobs?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we've already created a number of jobs in for the dispensary that we have in Edwardsville in Luzerne, and we will certainly be creating multiple jobs in the grow facility in Humboldt.
And there are local people that you're hiring, though. Is there special training you have to work?
Well, we've been providing a lot of that training since the industry's new to Pennsylvania. There is mandatory training that the state requires, and then we supplement that with additional training about the use of cannabis, its various forms and strains, and how what would be appropriate for particular patients.
I'd be curious to knowing how the guidelines for that were all set up.
The guidelines for the training that PA requires?
Right, yes.
My understanding is, and I can't say I was part of that process, but they did access a number of physicians and others who are experts in the area and put together a number of, they're basically online training resources through various medical schools. And once they cover both the security and other regulatory components of the program, as well as the actual use of cannabis for treating various qualifying conditions. And then the Department of Health approves that particular training seminar, and then that's what my staff accesses in order for them to be certified to work for us.
As a patient, I can't just walk into your dispensary then and say, this is going on, can I have medical marijuana, correct?
That's correct.
I think that might be a misnomer with some people. They don't think, what do I have to do?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a process. It's not too bad. It's about a 3 or 4 step process. If you want, I could quickly go through what one would do in order to access a medical marijuana ID card.
I think some people are curious about that, so yes.
Sure. Okay, so essentially, the first step is you would get onto the Department of Health website, which is medicalmarijuana.pa.gov. And if you hit the link for patients, there is a very basic form to fill out, your basic, you know, your name, your address, that kind of information. You fill that out online, and that's the first step. Then you get a patient ID number. The second step is you would go to a certified, or I should say a registered physician. And by a registered physician, that's a physician who's taken some continuing medical education and has been approved by the Department of Health to issue a certification for a patient, which will enable them to access, enable them to get a medical marijuana ID card and eventually access medical marijuana. So once you fill out your registration online, you get an ID card. Now you go to a registered physician. That physician will issue you what we call a certification. It's akin to a prescription, but it's called a certification since it's by virtue of the state program. And they'll do that online. And that's then you're up to the last step. The last step is once the physician registers your certification online with the Department of Health, you'll get an email. Department of Health will ask you for a fee of $50. You pay that fee online, and you will receive a medical marijuana ID card within a few days. And that will have an effective date right on it. You're good to go. You come into my dispensary. You have an initial meeting with the pharmacist here that's on staff just to make sure that there aren't any there aren't contraindications by virtue of your medical history or existing medications that you're on, and then you're good to go. You can go to the sales floor and access the product that would be most appropriate for the symptoms you're looking to alleviate.
So the medical marijuana does have potential to interact or counteract medicine that you may have already been prescribed and on?
Very few. There are really just one or two, I believe. That's something I leave to my pharmacists as the experts. But there are, I think, just a couple of medications that they are concerned with and a couple of conditions. For example, if you have a family history of schizophrenia or if you have a blood pressure issue, those kinds of things. They want to make sure that your physician's well aware of it, the physician that certified you, and that you're still good to go.
So yesterday, it was dry leaf medical marijuana that was made for sale in Northeast PA now.
That's right.
So the other form is the oil?
So there's a variety of forms. So there's oils, which is also to be vaporized in cartridges, disposable pens, or in cartridges that you attach to a pen that you would purchase and you can use for any number of cartridges. There are tinctures, which you use as a dropper under your tongue. There are topicals, as well as transdermal patches. So there are a whole host of forms that might be appropriate depending on your lifestyle, depending on your preferences and what you're looking to treat.
But you can't smoke that dry leaf medical marijuana.
No smoking of any form are permitted by the program.
And is that, do you know the reason why they're saying that?
Well, it's considered, vaporizing is considered far more healthy than combusting it. So they have decided that even though we're moving towards dry leaf, which should enable folks greater access to cannabis and perhaps at a lower price point so that more patients would be able to get it, they still don't want to advocate something that's not as healthy for you. So that's why they're limiting it to just vaporization.
I have two texts coming in that really don't make me happy. They're not good. The one said, when do we get medical heroin or medical meth, really? Sarcastic, right?
Wow.
But, you know, I'm thinking we do. It's called opioids, right? We have them on the market. And we also have Ritalin. So they would be kind of like your legalized heroin, I would think, right?
Well, you know, it's unsettling to hear a text like that, because here we have been working diligently at getting people off of opioids who have been pretty much dependent and addicted to opioids for 10, 15 years. So many opioid overdoses in the area. Medical marijuana has been proven. There are clinical studies. New England Journal of Medicine recently published one about how the incidence of opioid overdose decreases significantly, dramatically, when medical marijuana is available as an alternative. So it's to equate medical marijuana to those kinds of medications, unfortunately, you know, that's something of the past. Nobody really believes that cannabis is in the same class of those medications. Well, 60% of the country has it, now has it enacted as legal, and I think 75% or 80% of the country approves of it as use for medical purposes. So I don't want to offend your listener, but it's a little ignorant, I think, at this point to classify it the same way.
Tell me the history that you know, and which would probably be the true history of why marijuana was even illegal in the first place.
Oh, it's a little bit long and complicated, and it depends on whose version you ask for. But just to give you the quick view that I've read up on, I think his name was Anslinger. Henry Anslinger was responsible for the drug and alcohol, the federal organization that regulated all of that in and around the time that the prohibition was lifted. So with no alcohol, with the decriminalization of alcohol, this gentleman was left with a department that had really no purpose. And even though he previously publicly stated that he didn't feel that cannabis, which is what it was called at the time, cannabis was a problem for anyone's health, he needed to justify the existence of his department. And on went the beginning of the mission against cannabis. It also happened to fall in and around the time that the Mexican Revolution had ended. And here we had a number of immigrants, it's going to sound a little familiar, a number of immigrants coming from Mexico who folks were a little upset with for taking their jobs off of farms. And these immigrants who were less expensive labor often enjoyed cannabis after a long day of work. So it was readily available to take advantage of that. A little bit of a discrimination, a little bit of an economic difficulty that the country was in. We used a Spanish word, marijuana, which would sound foreign and kind of marginalize those folks. And then the mission against cannabis continued. Now it became marijuana. And then of course we had some movies that were published that only continued to promulgate the fallacy of all these terrible things that it could do. Your wives will start to engage with all in activities with different minorities. That was something else that was put out there.
There's
to take advantage of racism. So it's been a laundry list of kind of a snowball, I would say.
And something to do with the textile industry, I heard.
Oh, well, the competition with hemp, for hemp, you mean, if that's what you're referring to? Yes, I mean, hemp had a multitude of purposes. I believe that had something to do with some of the newspaper barons at the time who owned paper companies and didn't want to see hemp being used, which was a competing product. There were a number of other agendas that were being served rather than the needs of folks and any real information about the effect of cannabis and how it might help people alleviate symptoms.
True or false, you cannot overdose on cannabis?
I would say true.
But you don't know.
Well, I'll tell you why I say I qualified it. Could you utilize cannabis in a way that could then expose you to other risks, which would cause an overdose? Yes. So what do I mean by
and
that?
You could do the same thing with water.
It's the same, yes. And certainly it's not even close to something like alcohol, which you can clearly get alcohol, poisoning and find yourself in far greater
danger.
Trouble. But if you do something, irresponsible while you are under the influence, well, then yes, could that. But in and of itself, can cannabis cause an overdose? I haven't heard of it. I haven't read it. I haven't seen any documentation of it.
Now, are there warnings also? Like, we get any drug prescribed by the doctor that says do not operate heavy equipment while on this medication?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is not. Having a medical marijuana ID card is not a license to driving impaired, and it does not get you off the hook for doing something irresponsible. So can't imagine that being able to use cannabis in a medicinal way when we have folks like morphine, all kinds of opioids, right? Alcohol, that's all out there. That's all accessible. So, and I can't imagine that this is going to change anything whatsoever.
I know some people who have cards. They've had them for a while, but how long have you actually been doing this in Edwardsville?
So we were deemed operational. We were the fourth in the state on January 31st. We were open in February, but not with product. We were just giving information sessions. We opened our doors with product March 20th.
I had somebody asked, they said that you answered a question like you were a pharmacist. Are you a pharmacist?
I'm not. I'm a former attorney.
Okay, so you really did look into this.
Oh, yes, quite a bit.
You do have a pharmacist.
Correct. We have a pharmacist here whenever we're open for business. So there's always a pharmacist here on staff to answer patients' questions and to review their medical history.
For more information, you can visit their website, justicegrownpa.com. Special Edition returns in a moment. Listening to Special Edition. Today, we are taking a look at one of the big news stories that Pennsylvania is getting further and further into medical marijuana, not only growing, but in distribution. Intercom's Webster and Nancy spoke with Dr. John Brady. He is a Luzerne County internist and one of the local physicians who can write prescriptions for medical marijuana.
We were talking about medical marijuana and what it takes to get a card. We have Dr. Brady here on line one. Good morning, doctor.
Now, you had mentioned something about marijuanadoctors.com, right, for
yes.
advertisement?
There's a website, marijuanadoctors.com, tells you how to get a Pennsylvania medical marijuana card.
Right, okay. Yeah. Here's the scoop. I'm a medical marijuana doc, certified back in October.
Mm-hmm.
The law took effect January.
Right.
The way it works is the patients are to go online to register first.
Okay.
And that's at medicalmarijuana.pa.gov.
All right.
Okay.
That doesn't mean they're going to get their card.
Okay.
They have to then see a certifying physician. And then that means someone who completed a course like I did that explains which diagnoses the patient must have to get the marijuana ID card.
Mm-hmm. And there's like 17 different conditions, correct? Is that right?
Right now it's up to 21. The state keeps adding to them.
Oh, okay.
So the most common, all right, so next they would contact one of those certifying docs. They find that name on the website,
mm-hmm.
and it's listed by county.
Okay.
So I'm in Luzerne County, but I've been seeing patients from all over because there's certain counties in the state that have no docs.
Okay.
That are certified. So they come in, they bring their medical records because I have to authenticate that they have that diagnosis, especially if they're not my patient.
Right.
Right.
So the most common diagnoses I've certified so far to date has been cancer, naturally.
Yeah.
Parkinson's, Crohn's disease, PTSD,
mm-hmm.
seizures, autism, and AIDS. Those are the most common that mm-hmm. I've seen so far.
All right. Well, let me ask you now, what if somebody comes in there and you just have this sort of feeling that all they want to do is get some marijuana and they don't really have much that's affecting them, but what do they throw at you then? Like they have, you know, gas? Like what is it?
I don't think gas is.
Anybody that doesn't have documentation cannot get a card.
All right. Okay. But can you, verify that they have a condition that is not in their medical records once they get there? Or
no.
Okay.
I do not.
All
right. I mean, depends what other docs do. Yeah. I do not.
Yeah,
okay.
You don't do
we
that.
Are supposed to be the wall here for those that are legit
yes.
for getting the card.
That was my understanding. But, I'm also hearing stories that there are some doctors out there who are like, next. Here's your card.
No, well, you know what's going to happen? The state will come in and audit those records.
Oh, yeah.
Just like they audit doctors who write pain meds inappropriately.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
if they catch you issuing those cards, what we do is certify. Then the state sends them an email
mm-hmm.
for a fee. You're right. You asked about what's the card cost. The card costs $50, payable to the Department of Health.
Okay, but wait, let me ask you this question. Does a doctor make even a dollar on a diagnosis, on issuing a card? He says, you qualify for a card. Does the doctor get any money then?
Yeah, well, the insurance does not cover the doctor visit.
Okay.
So you pay, insurance companies consider marijuana illegal because it is still illegal
right.
by the federal government.
So this is
so
strictly
you
cash.
Have to pay cash for whatever it
right.
would be for a doctor's
right.
visit.
Right, and it varies. Like this area is kind of depressed. We charge about $200. It could go as high as $400,
right.
like in Allentown and Philadelphia,
okay.
a visit.
Right.
They come in, you go through all the paperwork, you should legitimately, you go through the process, which is a lot of signatures and registering them online and authenticating their identity with like license, a driver's license.
Yeah.
And then they're going to get an email from the state saying they're certified and they'll pay their fee online and they'll get an ID card issued within a week.
Okay.
They take the ID card now to the dispensary. And the dispensaries are listed on that website. And the nearest one in our area, in the Wilkes-Barre area, is in the Gateway Shopping Center. And the nearest one up in Scranton is in the Kaiser Oak Plaza.
Right, right.
And then they would call and make an appointment to meet with a pharmacist. And then they would go ahead and be dispensed the product.
Right.
All right.
So it sounds like you have, like you said, some pretty serious conditions. And this is stuff that's really helping those patients, is it not?
Well, that's what I'm glad you asked that. I started in January. I've been seeing patients in follow-up. Oh, chronic pain is another major category that's covered. The 80% of the patients with chronic pain that were on narcotics are off narcotics.
That's
off
wonderful.
The opiates,
right?
80%.
Yeah, that's pretty.
I
good.
Mean, I could not believe myself that this was going to be this effective.
Mm-hmm. Are minors eligible for this? Can with certain
conditions?
Well,
my specialty is internal medicine. I treat people that are adult,
okay.
18 and up. My youngest are like 19 and 20, and those are the people with seizures, usually from traumatic injuries like car accidents, or autistic
okay.
children.
Right.
So, I don't treat children.
Right.
We do get phone calls. There is a doctor in Allentown who's a pediatrician that's certified that will issue the ID cards for autism.
When you determine that somebody is qualified for a medical marijuana card, do you also make the call as to in what form they get it, or can they just then walk
no.
into the dispensary
See,
and say, I want the leaf?
No. That... You see, we still have to follow federal guidelines.
Sure. Mm.
Federal guidelines. Docs cannot prescribe.
Okay.
All
so,
we're doing
so
is certifying to the state the patient has the diagnosis.
Right.
So when they go to the pharmacist is technically the expert that says we're going to give you, and there is different forms. There's pills,
right.
tablets,
right.
oils.
Yeah. They just introduced Leaf last week, did they not?
I know. You're right.
Yeah.
And that is like so new for me. I'm not sure how that's given out as far as like, is it crushed and vaporized? I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But it came out because it's cheaper.
Sure.
The average cost is $100 a month and up
right.
for the medical marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So some people can't get access because they can't afford it.
Well, Dr. Brady, we appreciate you bringing
yeah,
us this information because
sure.
you really answered a lot of questions for us.
On Special Edition, Dr. John Brady talking with Intercom's Webster and Nancy about medical marijuana. There's been plenty of controversy, including locally, about medical marijuana, not only on the medical end, but on the legislative end as well. From Lackawanna County, one of those who has spoken out on marijuana issues has been Lackawanna County Commissioner Lorene Cummings. She got in on the topic when she spoke with Intercom's Vince Sweeney. We'll hear now from Lorene and Vince as we continue on Special Edition.
We have Lackawanna County Commissioner Lorene Cummings. And Ms. Cummings, I think most people know your position on the issue. Let me say it's a pleasure to have you here. I'm glad you called.
Oh, thank you. I'm happy that the discussion is happening.
Good.
I appreciate you having that discussion. It needs to happen.
Well, I have no problem with having it. And some people said that no one wants to talk about it because they're afraid of the local police. I'm going to take a wild guess and say a lot of local police don't want to be bothered with. I don't want people to take this the wrong way, but they don't want to be bothered with minor pot busts and things of that nature. But you are opposed to the legalization of marijuana completely. Is that correct?
Well, I'm opposed to the legalization of recreational marijuana.
Okay.
And when this law was passed, I always said if this is going to help people, I'm all for it. As a nurse, of course, I would be for something that would help anyone that was suffering with seizures or PTSD or anything that it would help them with. What people don't understand is that we already have a medication called Marinol that was approved by the FDA and is completely all THC. That they currently use for HIV/AIDS patients for nausea and cancer patients for nausea.
Okay.
And it does help them, but the side effects are, of course, excruciating because
they
do become...
What are the side effects from this medication?
Well, it's pure THC. It doesn't have CBD, apparently.
Oh,
and,
all right.
So they are getting the effects of being, high, for lack of a better term. But my issue is that... The way this was released is very confusing to not only the state and the local county commissioners, but also to physicians. It is not legal at the federal level because it's a Schedule I substance. So it's not considered a medication, and even the psychiatric community does not recognize it as such. So at the state level, our physicians cannot prescribe this medication, what they're calling medical marijuana.
Now, somebody else mentioned a med called cannabinol. Are you familiar with that?
Well, apparently they're referring to CBD, which is a portion of the marijuana plant. I guess they separate it between the CBD and the
Frankly,
THC.
I am not familiar with any of these because, blessedly, I've had no use for any of it because of health problems.
I've never had to use it either.
Great to know that it's available if you do need it.
Right, and if it were done the way I thought they were going to do it, is to do the research so that they can have their control studies and make sure that they had a dosage and a recommendation, but they don't. There is no prescription for it. It's a recommendation by a physician based on a diagnosis, and there's 21 legal diagnoses in the state that are recognized. So what happens is the doctor will recommend a patient go to the state and apply for a card to be able to purchase at a dispensary. Now, when they go into this dispensary, there is no physician there. There is a clerk, and what I'm hearing is possibly a pharmacist.
Well, you know, when you go to the drugstore, the obvious question is there's no physician there either when you pick up your Vicodin and whatever else. I mean,
prescription. It's a prescription by a physician that's ordering it with milligrams. So in other words, when you get a prescription written by a physician, it'll state the drug, the name of the drug, the milligrams that each pill contains, how often you're to take it, and for how long to take this pill.
So what happens if you just walk in? You can get what you want when you want it?
Well, the studies were never done to give doctors that.
Oh, I see. Okay.
You see what I'm saying? So it is no milligrams to take. They give it in a 30-day supply based on, I'm not sure what, because I've never gone into a dispensary, and I have called, and I am not able to get any information from them. So I think that it warrants some more discussion to find out exactly how they decide how much a patient is to take. Now, what I'm hearing, and like I said, I can't be positive on this, but what I'm hearing is they say take it low and slow. So start off with a small amount, and then as you tolerate it, continually increase it, and they give you a 30-day supply based on DASH only.
Okay. Now, let me get this straight just so I know, and if I'm not getting it straight, please straighten me out. You're not opposed, or you are opposed, to that kind of application or delivery, yes or no?
I'm opposed to the rollout, yes.
Okay.
I believe, and the reason that it's been rolled out this way is, like I said, because it is illegal at the federal level.
All right.
Physicians will lose their license if they try to prescribe medical marijuana.
You don't think we're ready for legalized, and you are definitely opposed to recreational marijuana.
Yes, I don't believe that we should. I think that that would be a mistake to bring out recreational. And, you know, I always hear the argument about, well, you know, it's better than alcohol or it's not as bad as alcohol. But, you know, there was an interesting statement made by a gentleman who has Project Sam, and he said, you know, that sounds like if my headlights are broken, I go around to the back and break the taillights, too. I mean, that's just silly. You know, it is not the same as alcohol. Not as many people, I believe, not as many people use marijuana as much as they do alcohol. Do we want to increase the usage of marijuana? No, I don't believe that's what we want to do.
Right.
Making it normalized is not the answer.
Well,
but
we got
if there
text,
is a chance,
go ahead. I'm sorry, Commissioner.
If there is a chance to bring out medical marijuana in the appropriate way to help people, I'm all for that. There would never be a time when I would not be for that. But like I said, the research has not been completed at the FDA and DEA level. There are protocols that you have to follow in order to get that research done. Right now, what they have is anecdotal studies, which are basically based on hearsay and surveys.
All right.
So it's
I understand your position, and I'm not for, you know, tossing bales of it into the street and letting people help themselves.
Right.
But you have to admit that the day could be coming when, well, that won't happen, that there will be shops where you can walk in and buy whatever suits your fancy.
And, I would hope not.
Well, I have mixed feelings, but if you, my opinion
See,
is it's going to happen sooner or later.
Well, the other issue I have is when that happens, they're competing for the strength of the THC.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, do you want to make it stronger and make people... It just doesn't make sense to me.
It doesn't make any sense on a lot of levels.
Thank you.
I thank you kindly. We'll speak to you again, all right?
Special Edition has been focusing on medical marijuana coming to Pennsylvania as well as northeastern Pennsylvania. We'll continue with our program in just a moment. Don't go away. As Special Edition continues, Intercom's Webster and Nancy caught up with an author of a brand new book about the opioid crisis.
We get to talk now with Beth Macy, author of this book that's out, Dope Sick Dealers, Doctors, and the Drug Company that Addicted America. So good morning, Beth Macy. We're so happy to have you with us.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
And I'm looking at some of the numbers here, all right? It's just in the introductory material. The opioid overdose numbers, 300,000 in the last 15 years.
Just how fast it's climbing with no signs of abating.
5% of the world's population here in America, we consume 80% of the opioids.
Yeah, actually, that is not correct. In the last chapter of the version, it's actually we consume about a third.
Still a lot. It's still massive.
It's crazy. Another thing, leading cause of death of Americans under the age of 50 is drug overdose. So when we go back and we try to see what the heck happened here, it seems like it was this convergence of you have people who were in economic tough economic situations. You have pharmaceutical company. You got doctors. What is it? What happened?
Yeah, it was sort of the perfect storm in the early to mid-90s where people started believing, upturning a century of thinking wherein we knew that opioids should be only prescribed for severe pain, end-of-life, cancer pain. And the pharmaceutical companies took advantage of that new pain as a fifth vital sign movement, and Purdue Pharma launches OxyContin in 1996. And the FDA allows it at that time to make this very squishy, unscientific claim that it was, quote, believed to reduce abuse when they had actually done no studies. They said things like, it's only addictive in less than 1%. Addiction is exquisitely rare. And, of course, we know it wasn't. And when it landed in these distressed rural communities where the jobs were going away and people actually were already taking smaller immediate release opioids,
And they sent their reps to try to get them to prescribe OxyContin, which was, of course, much stronger and abusable. It was like a nuclear bomb going off in those communities.
Well, you know, and if the pharmaceutical companies start pushing the, you know, the pain as the fifth vital sign, where's the American Medical Association on this? Why didn't they step in or at least say, hey, not so fast?
Exactly. I mean, 5,000 doctors, nurses, and pharmacists went on Purdue-funded trips to become trained in speakers and continuing medical education seminars. And as one lawyer in my book says it, it's like the doctors prostituted themselves for a few free trips to Florida. And, you know, in journalism, we're not supposed to take free things, right?
Yes.
Even though we're the enemy. I mean, I was taught never to take anything more than $25. If somebody sent us flowers after a story, we had to send them to a domestic violence shelter. I mean, where was the thinking? And to me, that's a place where we could start to turn this around, because more doctors need to be treating addiction. They need to become certified, waivered to prescribe buprenorphine or medication-assisted treatment. Many don't want to because they don't want, quote, addicts in their waiting room when they already have, quote, addicts in their waiting room. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
And so I think they helped get us into this. And they should help get us out of
it. Yeah, I mean,
honestly,
one of the things they're not supposed to do is do no harm, right? Do no harm. That is like one of the main things to think. Did it come down to money? Is that what it is, as you're saying? And what about the federal government and its role? Isn't it supposed to oversee this stuff as well?
Exactly. Well, the FDA, as I said, allowed this squishy, unscientific claim. And then Purdue sort of took advantage of it. And that claim was then trumpeted and exaggerated by its sales reps. The federal government actually did prosecute, or they came to a plea agreement in 2007, and the company paid $634 million in fines. But they went on producing this abusable drug until 2010, when they finally reformulated it. And the sales continue to climb. And, of course, we know the pharmaceutical industry as a whole, not just Purdue, but many opioid makers have spent nearly $1 billion between 2006 and 2015 on political campaigns and lobbying. And so where has the oversight been? I mean, we need to be better voters, better consumers. We need to see who's funding these campaigns, because we really need some urgency at this point with this epidemic. Because as you said in the beginning, when you quoted those numbers of statistics, it's a scary thing. We need urgent care for the addicted, because that's how a lot of the addicted people ended up getting addicted to begin with, is they were prescribed at urgent care centers and at their general doctors.
Well, what's going on now is we see that they were doing this real crackdown where, you know, physicians, there's all new rules about how much pills you can give, you can't call them in. But is that helping the situation? Or because we're also hearing where, because they're severely curbing it now for people who may be addicted, they may be turning to street drugs or other things.
Both things are true. They're doing better at not prescribing as much since the CDC guidelines came out in 2016. But the point to remember is both things can be true. The horse is out of the barn. We already have 2.6 million, and some people think that's an underestimate, of people with opioid use disorder. And we have a tsunami coming of hepatitis C if we don't get our arms around that. So I believe every community needs to get their police chief on board, needs to get their community services board on board, start offering easy access ways to get treatment, to keep people clean till they're ready to get in treatment. And by that, I mean things like syringe exchange and recovery programs in communities where addicted people can come in and trade dirty needles for clean, so they're not sharing needles and spreading this disease. I mean, I had a friend whose kid just was walking to school a few months ago and, like, saw three needles on the ground on the way to school. I mean, that should not be happening in our community.
Yeah. It's shocking also to find out how long it takes the typical opioid addicted user. You have here that takes the typical opioid addicted user 8 years and 4 to 5 treatment attempts to actually get remission for just a single year. We're talking about, that is the kind of hold it has on people.
That's on average. Yes, yes. And of course, we call the book Dope Sick, because dope sick is what's driving them to continue. Their brain is almost like held hostage by the morphine molecule. And everybody says, in the end, like, you don't want to be a heroin addict. You want to not be getting high. You just want to not be sick. Because so it's basically withdrawal. It's this excruciating pain, vomiting, diarrhea, chills that everybody calls the worst flu times 100.
Yeah, it's not something
we call the book dope sick. It's a little in your face, But, it, you know, say what it is, because we need to start talking about this the way we talk about cancer.
Yeah. And are we going to see, though, any kind of push for helping with people getting access to care? Because if only 10% of them even has access to care, do we really have any hope of beating this thing?
Well, I mean, Medicaid expansion under the Affordable Care Act has been the best tool so far. And, you know, we're still fighting that. We have 17 more states that haven't approved the expansion because of, you know, politics in their state legislatures. Virginia just approved, but it hasn't filtered down yet. I mean, even that the billions that were improved under the Obama administration, most of that has yet to trickle down to the communities. And so we really need some federal leadership here. President Trump said he was going to create or label this a national emergency, and instead he labeled it a public health emergency, which released no funds, no additional funds or authority. And you know, so it sounded like it, but it wasn't. And, you know, he talks about rolling back Obama's war on drugs, rollback where, you know, not imprisoning as many people. He talks about executing drug dealers. He doesn't talk about the drug companies or the doctors, you know? And I think, you know, need to get all this out on the table and really look at this with a critical eye. And I also believe the pharmaceutical companies that got us into this should be funding, helping us get out of it.
Well, you know, even if a doctor is trying to be responsible about it and you can't get a refill on your OxyContin or whatever other painkiller you're on, but you're already, it's too late and you're already addicted. You know, again, I'm looking at some of the numbers here that are in your book. A heroin dealer or somebody who's only doing it one time for $4,000 can get 50 grams of heroin, drive into Baltimore, and a week later leave with 60 grand in his pocket.
It's so multifaceted, right? It's about our economy. It's about our lack of opportunity, our growing inequality. I mean, I could only take on so much in one 300-page book, but that's certainly part of the story, too. And if you haven't been to any of these distressed communities recently, it's such a shock what's happened, where these pills were first being aggressively marketed. I mean, one public defender said, we're thinking of putting up a memorial wall. We've lost so many
clients. Oh, my gosh, yeah. And you see, we're seeing more and more, and I guess the way we have to do it is we're seeing more of the obituaries that actually mention it. It's hitting from the very rich to the poor.
Exactly. That's why the cover of the book is a wealthy subdivision in the city where I live, you know, with the mountains in the background. You all need to be protecting ourselves. As medical consumers, we need to protect in our families. I mean, if I could just give your listeners one takeaway, get rid of all the leftover opioids that everybody has in their medicine cabinets. You know, those need to be disposed of because so many teenagers start out, like, pilfering pills from their parents' medicine cabinets, grandparents' medicine cabinets. There's a lot of things we can individually do as well.
It's true. All right. Well, the book is out. It's a great book. It is called Dope Sick, Dealers, Doctors, and the Drug Company That Addicted America. Beth Macy, thanks for being with us.
A bike event this weekend spanning several counties could affect traffic. Here's a heads up. Brian, we have a big event coming up.
It's going to be a 65-mile ride for the American Cancer Society, our 10th annual indoor bike ride. I'm a cyclist and a cancer survivor, so I've been connected to the Cancer Society for quite some time now.
65 miles? Where is it taking us?
So the 65-mile route is going to start at Wilkes University's Ralston Athletic Complex, which will go out Wyoming Avenue into the Back Mountain, and then eventually up into Lackawanna County out by Lake Winola, drop back down into Luzerne County through Pittston and back to Wilkes-Barre.
Wow, I'm tired already just hearing you give the route. Now, there's also a little bit shorter.
We do have options for everybody. So we have a 65-mile route. We have a 33-mile route, which also goes out into the Back Mountain. It's just shorter and returns back to Wilkes-Barre. Then we have a family-friendly 10-mile route that starts and finishes at the Ralston Athletic Complex. It goes up onto the dike, so it's relatively flat, removed from traffic. It's really appropriate for people of any age.
So when is this happening?
It's on Sunday, August 12th.
And it's going to start at what time in the morning?
Registration is going to start at 7 o'clock. Wheels will be rolling at 8:15.
For everybody?
That's for the 65 and the 33. The 10-mile ride will start at 10 o'clock.
Now, when we're talking about something like this, you mentioned the fact that you are a cancer survivor. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's wonderful. When you are taking part in something like this, what's the feeling you get? Because I'm sure that you're not the only cancer survivor involved.
Well, it's just a matter of creating awareness for the fight against cancer. One in two people are affected by cancer. Everybody's truly affected by cancer. And, you know, every little thing that we could do to create awareness, raise funds for research and services is important to me and a lot of the other people that participate. So this is a local event. It is our 10th year. We've been trying to grow every year and really just keep it as friendly and open to everybody with options for everybody and most importantly, safe for all the participants.
Are you going to be doing the 65?
I will be. Barring any unforeseen circumstances, I will be doing the long ride and, you know, setting up the course the day before and, you know, being as active as I can in the event.
When we're talking about an event such as this one, about how many people, has it grown?
Yeah, we've been lucky to grow both in ridership and in funds raised year over year. So we've raised over $300,000 since the inception, and we usually have a couple hundred riders. It is one day. We do have fully stocked and supported rest stops throughout the course. There are volunteers throughout the course with support vehicles just in case of breakdown or if you need anything from a safety perspective. We have a logistics coordinator back at home base that's coordinating through the different channels with those support and gear wagons that are rolling throughout the course. We also have bike marshals who are cyclists on the course, keeping eyes and ears out for any potential hazards. And we do have, you know, support of the local police community as well.
I was going to say, when we're talking about this coming up on the 12th, we want to make sure that everybody knows that this is happening, because if people are traveling in those areas, we want them to be cautious and courteous.
There is a law in the state of Pennsylvania that you do need to provide 4 feet when passing a cyclist. So obviously, if you could slow down, not use your phone is the name of the game, but there will be police support along Wyoming Avenue. We start at 8:15, like I said, and there will be slowdowns. So just please be cognizant of that and appreciate, hopefully, the fact that we're trying to do good for the community and, you know, the fight against cancer.
When do people have to be registered by?
We do accept registrations up through the day of the event. However, we would prefer if people could sign up online at acsindoor.org. It just helps from a logistics perspective of having enough supplies. But if you can't participate and you'd like to make a donation, we can also accept donations via acsindoor.org. And we are happy to have volunteers at the event.
So it's not like a timed...
It's not a race. I mean, there's a, you know, competitive spirit to it for those that want to be competitive just by nature of, you know, having a bunch of cyclists riding around. I mean, there's a lot of hills that people try to challenge themselves to ride up, who could get up more quickly. But it's absolutely not a race. We welcome absolutely everybody. There's a route for everybody, you know, whether it be a 10-mile family-friendly ride, which you don't even need to do all 10 miles. Just get out there on your bike and have a good day.
All right. Once again, let's give everybody the where, the when, and any of the other information that you think that, especially that website.
Okay. So it's the 10th annual American Cancer Society Indoor Bike Ride. It's on Sunday, August 12th. It will be starting and finishing at Wilkes University's Ralston Athletic Complex, which is catty corner to Kirby Park, which is a different starting location than the past. The website, acsindoor.org, or you could also find us on Facebook/indoor.
And I understand you're going to have a brand new person rooting for you?
Yes. My wife and I welcomed our son, Jack, a week ago, and he will be at the finish line.
Yay, Jack. And pretty soon he'll have his helmet and he'll be with Dad.
Hopefully very soon, yes.
And remember, if you come along any of the cyclists as they are traveling, there is a law in Pennsylvania. You must give them 4 feet in order to travel safely.
Thanks for listening to Special Edition. A weekly look at the issues in the news and the personalities shaping the stories. A production of Intercom Communications.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.